Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's FPC Radio Live. It's January the 9th, 2023, and the regular season in the NFL is over. It's kaput. It's finished. It's done. We're on to the playoffs, John, because I don't know about you, but 18 weeks kind of flew by. I mean, we say it every single year, so I'm sorry if I'm sickening people with the overdone cliche, but no, this season flew by. This last week was perhaps the most one of the most eventful final weeks of the regular season in any NFL, not only with the off-the-field storylines, but the intriguing playoff implications, including last night, John. And, you know, before we get to that, I know it's going to be a painful thing. I do want to bring up one thing, because I'm a big Three Stooges.
Do we have to?
Yeah, well, we have to, but I'm going to lighten the mood a little bit by talking about one of the things that I love, and that's the Three Stooges. Well, actually, now that I think about it, anyways, today, January 1st, or 9th, rather, I'm going back about a week and a half, and in that case, the Packers would still have a playoff shot. Sorry. I apologize. I'm just, you know, just putting off the inevitable. I mean, the Patriots are out of the playoffs, the Buccaneers. I mean, we'll see. Luckily, they got the Cowboys this week, but we'll see what happens there. But today is actually, on January 9th, 1947, John, the Half-Wits Holiday episode of The Three Stooges aired for the first time. And the reason I bring that up is that was Curly's last episode as a member of the, like, full-time member of the Three Stooges, because he actually suffered a massive stroke during the filming of that episode. And if you go back, it's the premise of the episode was the Stooges, like, there's a high society group who wanted to teach the Stooges manners, and there was a bet that they could become gentlemen, you know. Very classic, you know, a storyline when it comes to that type of comedy. Towards the end of the episode, they get into the ballroom where they're supposed to show off their manners. You see Curly there, but in the final scene with the pie-throwing scene and everything, he is obviously very not present in the episode, and that is because just prior to that, he had suffered a major stroke, which obviously kept him from performing and later led to his death a few years after that. So I guess I said I was going to lighten the mood, but then it kind of made it a little bit depressing. But it just happened to be today, and I just happen to be watching. I have all the discs, you know, on DVD. I just happened to be watching that disc last night. I usually throw them on at the end of the night to kind of, you know, go to sleep to, and that was just happened to be that one. So for any Stooges fans out there, I know my good buddy Mike DeBate, you know, we talk Stooges all the time, so I'm sure he knows that, but I don't know. In the spirit of the January 1st Stooges marathon that I grew up on, I always like to watch a lot of those episodes around the beginning of January, and this time around, I got alerted to this anniversary.
I'm still amazed at how good those look, right? They've been so well-preserved. They look fantastic. I mean, it's like, obviously, the Hitchcock films that were in black and white look fantastic, and they're, you know, 75 years old, and they still look really, really great because they're on film, and, and that preserves better than anything else. But yeah, I mean, those were some tough guys. I mean, he suffered the stroke, and they continue on with finishing the episode. Yeah. So again, that was 1947. Times have changed.
Yeah, quite a bit. And look, I mean, that was if you've watched as much as I have, and I've certainly seen them in order, you know, because like I said, part of it is having the DVD, and you can kind of see a progressive decline prior to that, you know, just in Curly's mannerisms and his ability, his speaking ability. It just, things you could kind of tell in hindsight, obviously, looking back at it. But I always kind of, every year since I was a kid, you know, watching that Stooges marathon really got me hooked. But since then, I always kind of get the urge to watch a bunch around this time of the year. So, anyways, enough of talking about the Stooges. I guess we're going to keep talking about Stooges, because we're going to talk about some really funny, ironic, some weird just moments and chain of events that occurred yesterday. Because, first of all, I mentioned Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. You want to start right there, John? You want to just rip that Band-Aid off and just, okay.
Absolutely. Well, you know me. I'm not afraid to criticize Aaron Rodgers. I'm very analytical.
Me neither.
When it comes, to him. Yeah, you. I know you're not. That's for sure. Most everyone is ready, willing, and able to criticize him, and he deserves criticism. He had an off year this year. He wasn't particularly good last night. There were moments where he looked like Aaron Rodgers, and then there were other moments where he looked like he just wasn't engaged. And that's been kind of the season,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, not just last night. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the 4-game winning streak, I'm like, okay, he's not playing great, but he's leading.
Yeah.
And last night, it seemed like, again, they reported that the thumb got banged up again. And that final drive was something that they've done a lot this year, where they have a final drive. They're down 4 points with 6 minutes left. Someone please tell Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers or whoever that you don't have to try to construct a game-winning drive so that it ends at the buzzer.
Yeah.
Like, you can play with a little bit more pace so that maybe if you don't score on that drive, you punt and you hold them and get another chance. Maybe you get two possessions rather than just one. They did this against the Tennessee Titans earlier in the year. They've done it for several years. It's maddening. It's like they don't play with urgency. I'm not saying you have to rush through things, but play with a little bit more force and a little more urgency. When they do that, they're a little bit better. But look, if they had won last night, they'd be going to San Francisco, and maybe they just save themselves the embarrassment of getting destroyed by what I think is the best team in the NFC. And again, that would make Rodgers 0-5 in the postseason against San Francisco. That's not a good look, especially you remember when he was drafted in 2005. He says he's going to make them pay for not taking him first overall, and he's 0-4 in the postseason. So, obviously they would have been better off with Aaron Rodgers than Alex Smith, but those words may come back to haunt him at some point.
Yeah, and look, in this weird backwards way of how we look at things, it's almost better that he didn't make the playoffs, to your point, than to go out and get just absolutely steamrolled by San Francisco, right, who would run over them when they were at their peak, and they're clearly not at their peak right now. And look, it's not all Devontae Adams. I think he's a large part of it, and a lot of the things that I talked about prior to the season kind of were ringing true all year. And this is, how do you replace his production? And over the last 2 years, when the Packers were truly elite, 30 touchdowns and or 3,000 yards and like 29 touchdowns. You know, you just don't replace that. And they certainly, and we even talked about this at the beginning of the season. We didn't think that they did an adequate job in trying to replace those players. They weren't going to go out and find a one-to-one comparison of Devontae Adams to another receiver. You're not going to find that, but you can adequately replace the production. Look at what Kansas City's done. Now, again, you ask Chiefs fans, they think, it's Patrick Mahomes and no offensive line and no offensive players, but they have really good offensive players, and they did a good job replacing bodies on offense and players that can make plays and do things on offense. The Packers did not. And we saw that all season, because it wasn't just that, you lose Devontae Adams' talent, but this year more than not, you realize how much, Aaron Rodgers kind of needed that, especially this year. And it could have made a lot of things look a lot better than what ultimately they were, and certainly could have masked a lot of problems that they had, certainly on offense. Because, look, they had a pretty good running game, really good running backs. You have some talent on offense. Christian Watson looks like he's going to be a stud. But this team just could never find that groove or rhythm or identity really on offense, because what were they? Were they an Aaron Rodgers led team? Were they a running team? Were they, a team that never is out of it? I don't think there were any of those things. I have no idea what they were.
No, they were an 8-9 team, the third best team in their division. And fortunately for them, the Chicago Bears play in their division. I mean, look, I think everyone is going to anoint the Detroit Lions as the favorites to win the NFC North next year, and probably for a good reason. I mean, they were 9-8. They won 8 of their last 10. Their offense looks to be very, very strong, and their defense is young and aggressive, and they're buying into Dan Campbell's message. And you're in a division with, is Aaron Rodgers coming back next year? Is he going to request a trade? What the hell is going to happen with that? And you got Minnesota that went 13-4, but we think that's kind of like a fake 13-4, and they'll probably revert to being maybe a close to 500 team next year. So everyone's already on board with the Lions being the team to beat the NFC North for next year.
Yeah, the biggest thing, though, is, and this is kind of, and it wouldn't be talked about now, but what are you going to get out of Jared Goff? He had a great season this year.
He did.
I don't think it's off to say that you can't 100% expect that again next year. And if you don't get that level of quarterback play, this Detroit Lions team isn't going to be taking any steps forward.
So he'll be Jared Off next year.
Yes, Jared Off. Or perhaps, John, perhaps a soon-to-be 46-year-old will find his way up to Detroit and save that franchise next year.
You know what? I wrote a column years ago about that. I was like laughing. I was like, okay, he's going to go first to win a title with Tampa. And then, you know what? He'll go win a title in Cleveland because they haven't done anything in half a century. And then he's going to go to Detroit, the ultimate losing franchise, and win. And what the hell, why not? And I think his mom's family is originally from Minnesota, not Michigan.
Yeah, but he obviously went to school in Michigan. So, hey, who knows?
Not a bad spot, right? I mean, they've got some talent there. That offensive line is elite. Jamal Williams is a studded running back. DeAndre Swift is outstanding. They got some wide receivers, and they got two first-round picks this year. They own the Rams' first-round pick as well, so they can stack that defense. And look, Dan Campbell, the thing I like about Dan Campbell is, first of all, that guy, if he stepped away from coaching, would go into TV in like 5 seconds and be like a stud at that. But I think what he talks about, he actually believes.
Yeah.
Like it's not fake, and players are buying into it, so good for them. Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting. Brady going to the Detroit Lions. I mean, talk about saving the ultimate loser franchise. I mean, that would be awesome.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, John. He did already go to the franchise that had the worst winning percentage in all of sports. And a win against the Cowboys on Monday will match the entire franchise's playoff win total before he arrived. They only had 6. They have 5 since Brady's been there, including, obviously, the Super Bowl. So, Brady brought up a great point, and it's up on the screen here, and I didn't realize this, but the Lions were the only team in the NFC North with a positive point differential, including the Vikings.
Yeah, with 13-4. No, I going into that game, I was nervous. They had chances to really widen the lead in the second quarter. They lost that game in the second quarter. They're up 9-3. They're driving for at least another field goal, maybe a touchdown. You're up either 12-3 or 16-3, and then Aaron Jones fumbles, and he's had fumble issues in the past. Also, the first drive of the game, you got first and goal at the 5, and you can't score. We talked about it before the show. Rodgers could have probably walked in for a touchdown instead. He does this crazy shovel pass that doesn't work. So you had chances in the first half to be up by multiple scores. And at that point, maybe you put Detroit to sleep. But it's 9-6 going into halftime, and I'm like, they're up 3. They've kind of dominated the first half. That was not a good sign.
Yeah, and there was a weird feeling going into that half, and that's never a good sign for a team that struggled as much as Green Bay has all season. So I guess that brings up the question that obviously was a question last year, and I think becomes even more of a question this year, and whether or not you listen to Aaron Rodgers after the game, you got to wonder, is he coming back next year? Whether it's with the Packers or in general. I mean, because again, you know, it might just be the post-loss blues, and that happens, but he seemed a little, dejected and a little just kind of taking in the moment, so to speak. And by that, I mean, like, taking in the moment as in this might very well be the last time he's up there doing this.
Yeah, I mean, he talked with Chris Collinsworth and Mike Tirico in preparation for the game about that. He wanted to win this game because he knew he wasn't going to play at Lambeau the rest of the year. Maybe he was even hinting that it wouldn't be never playing at Lambeau again if he retires or if he goes to some other franchise. Who knows if they play at Lambeau. He also was asked to do a jersey swap after the game with Jameson Williams, the stud rookie receiver from the Lions. And he said, I think I'm going to hold on to this. He didn't do it. Not because he's, a guy that, wants to disappoint a young guy. It's just that he may think it's his last game. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if he retires. The only thing is, I think, you got to give these guys a little space and time to do this, but you also can't wait till June. Like, we can't be doing what they did with Favre for several years where, ESPN's live, with Brett Favre sitting on the tractor opening up, Bud Lights. What would Rogers' stakeout place be, like a Starbucks or something? Like, I don't know, or somewhere in the jungle on Iowa.
What's that show, like Survivor Man, something like that? Off in the woods somewhere. Although he apparently is now involved with one of the Milwaukee Bucks executives' daughters or something like that. Apparently,
Mallory Eden, 26 years old. Yeah, we first saw her about 8 years ago at the draft lottery. She was 18 at the time. Her dad is one of the principal owners of the Bucks, and Rogers does own 1% of the Bucks. So who knows with him? I mean, America's Bachelor, I guess, at this point.
Apparently. Well, speaking of The Bachelor, wasn't his brother on The Bachelor, Jordan?
Yes, exactly. What family they got there.
Yeah, it's quite a dynamic. But look, I'm with you. You know, you got to give these guys time to, kind of just think it through and everything like that. And I'm with you with the whole jersey swap thing. I know, look, you know, some people may think I'm an Aaron Rodgers hater, but, you know, the reality of it is I'm not. I'm more of a realist. And but I know the real haters out there were certainly willing to jump on the jersey swap thing. Oh, what a jerk. But I right. kind of feel like you do. Like, he's looking at this as, look, this might be my very last game. It at least maybe my very last game with the Packers. You know, I'd imagine that he'll get something to the kid. You know what I mean? There'll be something off the screen that no one will talk about, or maybe he'll get, you know, maybe he'll tweet it after the fact, you know, not Aaron Rodgers or whatever. But I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what goes on. I mean, he mentioned even talking about the future with the organization, what their plans are, what are they looking for. That might be an inclination that, you know, he's willing to move on from the franchise, but still wants to play, understanding that, you know, look, it's probably better for the franchise at some point to make that move. And if you're the franchise, do you want to start? And like I said, we talked earlier, Christian Watson looks like a stud. Do you want to have his early development done with a quarterback you know that's not going to be here long term, or do you want to see what you have in Jordan Love and react that way earlier rather than later? I guess that's kind of, it started as a rhetorical question, but I kind of want to hear your thoughts on that, John, because
I think you're right on. Yeah, I think because what happens is, first of all, what can you get for Aaron Rodgers on the open market? The contract is an issue because of dead cap space and all of that, right? So you have to factor that in at some point. Are you going to get a haul for him? Again, he's 39. He'll be 40 next year. And he does seem to be playing on a year-to-year basis.
Look, based on the returns we've seen from some of these other veteran quarterbacks this past year, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, I think teams are going to be hesitant to pay a boatload.
Yeah, especially for a 39-year-old guy. I mean, like Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson, you figured they would at least have some runway to play for a while. Now, neither of those look good this year. So, yeah, there's going to be some hesitancy there. Brett Favre, when he went to the Jets, I think got them a second-round pick, if I'm not mistaken, back in 2008, and he was late 30s. I think Rodgers takes care of himself better than Brett Favre. And, again, it's 15 years later, and athletes tend to take care of themselves better than they did 15 years ago. So, yeah, whatever you could get. I mean, I know – one team that's been floated out there is the Tennessee Titans, because they're going to need to upgrade the quarterback position at some point. And I know he's building or has built a house in Nashville, but so is everyone else.
Yeah.
But I that uniform is hideous. I don't want to see him in a Tennessee Titans uniform. Seriously, that would be, like, odd. Like, I'm big into that. Like, Brady in a Raiders uniform, oh, my Lord, that would look gorgeous.
Yeah.
Brady in a 49ers uniform, that would look spectacular. Even a Lions, I mean, I know – that's far-fetched, but the Lions have actually pretty cool uniforms and a good logo. But Tennessee's got one of the worst uniforms in the league.
Yeah,
I don't want to see him in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's just so, like, I don't know. You ever see the show Arrested Development?
Yeah.
Yeah, you remember Anne?
Right.
George Michael's girlfriend, her? That's what they planned, you know? It's
just,
it exists. There's nothing to it.
That whole division has bad uniforms. Like, Jacksonville's weird, and then the Texans are terrible. The Colts have cool uniforms because they're classical.
Yeah,
you know,
they haven't changed in like 60 years.
Yeah, which is fine. You know, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, yeah, I don't want to see him in Tennessee. Hell no.
You know what? Since we're on the top of your jerseys real quick, I don't want to stay too. I'm done with the Patriots new jerseys. You know? I'm done.
Oh, yeah.
I've never really liked them. And the more I see them, the more I don't like them.
They look a little like the Red Sox in the mid-70s when they had that elastic waistband with red and blue. Or typewriter ribbon. I mean, that's an old.
That's what it looks like.
But it looks like typewriter ribbon, yeah. But I'm like, no, I don't like them at all. I don't need to go back to the red uniforms. I think they should be blue. The British wore red, so.
Yeah.
we don't have these mixed messages going forward.
Look,
go back to blue.
Like, there's part of me who is like, oh, just go back to the old uniforms. But then I'm like, it's actually kind of nicely tied into the dynasty run, because they use those mm-hmm. jerseys essentially from the beginning to the end of the dynasty, you know, with like a little overlap at the beginning.
Right.
But I don't like those jerseys. I don't know. Ugh.
And I don't like the all blues either.
No, me like neither.
Blueberries or whatever.
Yeah, they look like the Texans. All. I mean, they play like the Texans sometimes, so it kind of makes sense. But yesterday, you know, speaking of the Patriots, obviously their playoff hopes have been dashed. I don't think it's clear it's end of the world type situation for the Patriots. I think there are a lot of positives. I think we're going to, you know, we'll lose sleep at night thinking about some of the boneheaded things that they did to cost themselves games. I mean, obviously, look to the Raiders game primarily mm-hmm. because you win that game, you're not even fighting for a playoff spot. You're already in the playoffs. Yesterday, obviously, giving up the two kick returns for touchdowns is, I mean, you can't win football games like that. They were competitive. They were competitive, and if there's one silver lining in all of this, and I know he ended up throwing three interceptions yesterday, although I think two of them were really not his fault. The first one was, I think the second one was a deflection, and the third was just a end of the game, huck the ball up, see what you can do type situation. Mac Jones has looked good the last month or so. Very promising, more decisive, and certainly something you can sit there and say, okay, that's what you can work towards and work with. But this team needs a lot of work moving forward. They need more talent. They need a better coaching situation, not from the, you know, maybe not from the head coach, but I'm talking offensively. Bill O'Brien's name has been floated about, you know, as an offensive play caller. That could work, certainly. This team is close. But it's also going to be interesting to see how they transition away from guys like, you know, Matthew Slater, who clearly looks like he's finished, and very likely Devin McCourty, who even in his age has been a key member of this defense the last couple of years, in which, well, that was really the strength of their team.
Yeah, I would think McCourty's going to retire because he'll go into media in like 5 seconds. I know his brother Jason is already involved with the NFL Network and Westwood One and does a really nice job. And Devin will be fantastic, whether it be the NFL Network or wherever. He's really, really talented guy. And I think Matthew Slater's already, you get the feeling that he's going to retire and probably go into the ministry. He that's what's in his heart and soul. Mm-hmm. So I think both guys will be gone. And yeah, you'd lose leadership. At some point the Patriots have some good young players. I think Kyle Duggar has the potential to be a really good leader on this team. I think Christian Barmore is someone that, if healthy, can be a force on the interior of that defense. So, you know, you've got some building blocks there. And again, they win 8-9, a lot of close games. I was impressed yesterday, to be honest with you. I think that's about as good as Mac Jones has looked in 2 years. It's kind of weird, though, that his three best performances this year were against Baltimore, Minnesota, and Buffalo. You lost all three of those games, but you walked away saying he can mm-hmm. do some nice things. Now, he had three interceptions against Baltimore in three yesterday, but you're right, Ian. Some of those weren't his fault yesterday. I thought he delivered the ball pretty well. So the best the offense looked all year against a really good defense that was obviously, you know, jacked up for that game. But yeah, the special teams are a problem this year. I believe from 2000 to 2021, the Patriots only allowed 6 kickoff returns for touchdowns. They allowed 3 this season, and 2 were yesterday, obviously. So that's a concern. Maybe Joe Judge goes back to coaching special teams and Cam Acord has shown the door because he's been here for a few years and the special teams have deteriorated. Maybe someone should let Tony Romo know that, because after the second kick return for a touchdown, he goes, "This is amazing against the Patriots. They always have great special teams." Well, they haven't the last couple of years. But
Tony Romo did not have a good day yesterday.
Shut up at some point, right? I mean,
well it's not it's not only that, but it's like he was so positive about the catch being out of bounds. I think that was the play where he's like, it's like 50-50. I'm like, what are you looking at, Tony?
I don't get it.
This is exactly this is the same way I treat like people that get overhyped when they first come into league. It's like, all right, let's give it a break. Like, people are so sick of Phil Simms that they latched onto Tony Romo. And because he had a good couple first games where, you know, he was calling out coverages, doing this, doing that. It's I can't listen or watch games where he's calling them because it drives me nuts. And it's not that he says things that I disagree with. I mean, there's going to be plenty of announcers that say things I disagree with. It's just the constant, like, and it's almost nonsensical at this point. That's what it's deteriorated to. At least, like, you could understand what he was saying early on. Now it's just, like, gibberish, you know? Like,
sounds like he's passing a kidney stone.
Yeah, he's
Jim, I don't know. And Nance is a consummate professional. He's really good. You could throw him into any sport. He's going to be outstanding. But, yeah, even on these calls, it's like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, you're paid $18 million.
You're paid a lot of money to know. So.
Yeah, say something. I mean, look, I'm a big Aikman fan. I think Troy Aikman's the best of all the lead analysts because he's not afraid to say things. And he's such a smart player.
And it doesn't mean he's always right. No. I mean, he's just more even keeled, a little bit more, maybe not deadpan might be the way to say it, but, you know, in a very serious manner, you know.
And it kind of explains how they play the quarterback position, right? Aikman was a consummate leader, tough, all buttoned up. And Romo was kind of a loose cannon as a quarterback, right? Yeah. I mean, he was prone to big interceptions at the wrong time. And he kind of is a swashbuckler and flies off the seat of his pants when he does this type of stuff. So, yeah, it kind of explains how these guys are going to do. Maybe in 10 years when Tom Brady retires, we'll see how he does in the booth.
Yeah, well, in 10 years, right? If that, maybe. We'll see. Speaking of Brady, yesterday, obviously, I would have liked to see more from the starters just in terms of time played. After, you know, their starting center, which is a backup, goes down and you start to risk injury, I thought that was probably the smartest thing that this coaching staff has done all season, and that is pull your starters, and who cares about that game against the Falcons? Because despite everything that happened, look, in the little bit of time that Tom played yesterday, he looked great. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know if the last couple weeks just have flipped a switch and you know, who knows? You know, I know there's no real switch that you can flip, but you know what I mean? Like, if they finally... Because what did they do, John, yesterday? They came out and spread the ball out. They mixed up the plays with some play action and some, you know, getting the ball to their wide receivers early. And then they played some nice runs off of that. And that's exactly what I think we've all been just begging the Buccaneers to do. In order to see consistent offensive success. Now, obviously Chris Godwin had another fumble yesterday, but, you know, I'm not terribly concerned about that because he's starting to look a lot better, a lot healthier, rather. I don't want to imply that his play was indicative of his recovery from injury. Like, we just felt and we watched him all season and say, look, he just doesn't have that extra burst. Well, he's starting to get a little bit more of that back. I've seen it more in his yards after the catch when he catches Brady passes, and you're starting to see how big of an impact that has. So now you're picking up big chunks of yards, you know, through the air and consistently not putting yourselves in terrible third down situations. Now, obviously, he's going to have to hold on to the ball, and if anyone watching the game noticed, him and Julio Jones and a bunch of people were over there talking for about, and I love this, by the way, and I know this probably goes on every game, you know, players are always having conversations about how to do things better. But I love their discussion about just, you know, holding on to the ball because you look at these guys who, you know, Julio Jones is Julio Jones. Chris Godwin's been in the league forever. And they're still over there talking about, okay, well, next time this has happened a lot, how can I do this better? And you hope that obviously that's not an issue in the playoffs. But I've said it already today. The Buccaneers get, I don't want to say gifted because they have their own struggles. So it's not going to be a cakewalk. But in a way, they got gifted a great matchup this postseason against a very mediocre Dallas Cowboys team and a quarterback who has thrown 15 interceptions this year, John, in 12 games.
Crazy. Yeah, he's really regressed. I mean, I think in the last 17, he has 11 interceptions. He's like good for two turnovers a game. Yeah. And also fumbles. The offense doesn't look all that good for Dallas. The thing is, they'll have moments where they look explosive and they'll put up a bunch of points, and then there'll be other games where they can't get out of their own way. And even their defense is somewhat regressed as well. It appears to be a two-man defense at this point. You know, Trayvon Diggs is a really good cornerback. He is prone to give up some big plays, but he'll make big plays for you as well. Micah Parsons is a stud. And the other nine guys out there are kind of trying to find their way. So this looks like, and it would be called an upset because Dallas is a three-point favorite, which I think this game should be closer to being a pick. I know it's tough to say an 8-9 team should be favored over a 12-5 team, but the 8-9 team is at home and has Tom Brady, a quarterback who's never lost to Dallas. He's 7-0 in his career against Dallas. And I know we always throw those things out there. I mean, you know, like he beat them in 2003. Does that mean anything? I mean, most of the guys playing now were like in grade school. So, but he's never lost to the Cowboys. And also, Dallas has not won a road playoff game since like the mid-90s.
Since I was in grade school.
Since you were in grade school. I mean, you know, it is really a weird matchup there when you're talking to Brady against the Cowboys. But again, we'll see what happens. I think Dallas is more talented than Tampa, but with that guy behind center, I give them a real chance to win that game on Monday night.
Well, and that's the thing. The difference in quarterbacks is, I think, massive, especially if you're getting Dak Prescott turning the ball over, and as Braden brings up. There are a lot of pick sixes, too. This isn't just your run-of-the-mill throwing interceptions. He's thrown, I think, what, three of them?
Yes.
Something like that? Yeah, and much of them coming in the last month and a half. So, I think, again, this Buccaneers team has struggled all season creating turnovers on defense. If they can't do it, then, you know, this idea that the Buccaneers are going to have a good matchup goes out the window. But I feel like Dak can't not throw an interception. You know, like, at this point, it's almost a given. Like, you might as well just get it out of the way early because you know what's going to happen. So we'll see what, you know, what the Buccaneers bring. I mean, what's going to be huge for them is if they get Ryan Jensen back. Because obviously we saw an injury to their center Hainsey yesterday, but over the last couple of weeks, like I said, combined with the better play calling, because this all matters. I mean, if you're doing the same things and are very predictable, well, yeah, of course your offensive line is going to get beat a lot, because the other team essentially knows what you're doing all the time. They've gotten more creative on offense. They've done a lot better job pass protecting. Now, it's not perfect. I think the decision to take Tom Brady out was that play where the ball was snapped and Brady was already getting hit by the time he got the ball. They were just like, all right, that's it. Take him out.
Get him out.
He's already set his record. He's thrown a few passes. He threw a very nice touchdown. He add that to the list. 98 players now have caught touchdown passes from Tom Brady in his career. You know, like, take him out. And like I said, I would have loved to see him stay in there. I would have loved to see him pad some stats. And not only that, I would have loved to see them continue to find a little bit of rhythm. But at that point, the game was pointless. You know what you got in front of Dallas. And to be honest, they're a veteran team. So would it have been nice to fine-tune some things? Sure. But you can still do this without doing that. So I was perfectly okay taking him out. Because, as it turns out, John, you're not going to get too far down the list of quarterbacks in the NFC playoffs that you trust before you get to Tom Brady. And maybe you put Jalen Hurts on because ahead of him because of just how good he's been and how good the Eagles have been. But Kirk Cousins, no. Dak Prescott, absolutely not. Brock Purdy, he's been great, but individually, are you going to bank on Purdy over Brady? Probably not. So, you know, who's...
Geno Smith?
Smith.
No, there really is. No, there really is no one. I mean, I haven't done the numbers yet, but Brady has 35 playoff wins. I think Dak has one. Kirk Cousins has one. Geno Smith, Purdy, and Jalen Hurts have none. So, yeah, so...
Well, it's not even necessarily about just their history, because kind of to your point, like, what does playoff wins in 2003 matter in this discussion? No, sure. This isn't like a legacy, prop up for Brady. This is combined with the fact that he's still playing at an elite level. Like, look, John, he ended up finishing the year second in passing yards, and he kind of left a lot on the table. You know what I mean? Like, he was at 4,600 coming into week 17. He ended with 4,694 or something like that at 45 years old. Like, come on now. The guy can still sling it. So it's like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, if we were to power rank the quarterbacks in this conference, and it's not, like I said, it's not just a legacy award. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to go too far down the list before you hit Brady. And like I said, I mean, I might even put him at the top of the list just because of who he is and the fact that he's still playing at the level that he's playing at.
Yeah, it's Hurts and Brady, right, would be the top two guys, because everybody else is, you know, nothing too great out there. So, I mean, I would say, and again, Hurts, who's an MVP candidate, probably not going to win it. I think Mahomes is going to win it at this point because Hurts missed the two games. But, yeah, Brady's still playing at a very, very high level. He's got his weapons there, and if Ryan Jensen's back, that can really help that interior of the offensive line. And they're at home. And look, Dak Prescott's playing the worst of his career right now at the wrong time. So, the AFC is completely different. That's like, look at these guys. Look at these shiny toys. Look at these explosive players. The NFC is a little bit different. Yeah, I would still think he's the best quarterback out there. And at worst, second behind Jalen Hurts, who, again, is coming back off an injury as well. So how healthy is he? Although they do have the bye week, which is going to come in handy for them.
Yeah, and look, they looked so much better with Hurts under center. I mean, it's a shame that he did miss those two games because, again, I think he was the front runner heading into that week before he started missing a couple of games, and it's kind of unfortunate that, you know, it kind of played out that way. But for the Eagles' sake, I mean, we saw what they looked like without Jalen Hurts, and we saw what they looked like even with a moderately healthy Jalen Hurts, you know? So, all right, before we wrap up the show, I'm going to ask you a question, John. I'm just going to ask you very simply of super...
Do I need my lawyer? Do I need my lawyer?
Depends on what your answer is.
Okay.
We have 3 days of super wild card weekend, 2 games on Saturday, 3 games on Sunday, and then we top it all off with Buccaneers and Cowboys on Monday night. It's the day of my root canal, John, so hopefully I will not be getting two of them in one day. So anyways, of all those games, I'm not talking about, obviously, you know, you want to see Brady play or you want to see this, you want to see that. Of those games, what is the most intriguing matchup for you this weekend, and kind of what are you, I guess, most excited for on top of that?
I really like the quarterback matchup between the Chargers and Jacksonville, and that's the Saturday night game, which kind of surprised me because that's normally a marquee game, and you're going to see Jacksonville for the second straight week playing on Saturday night. Like, that's how much the sports flipped this year. Herbert against Trevor Lawrence, that's going to be spectacular on Saturday night. That's the game that kind of sticks out for me as one that's going to be very interesting. I mean, Seattle at San Francisco, I mean, that could be, I don't know, 34-10, the way I look at it. Cincinnati, Baltimore, we'll see them again. Miami without Tua, do they have any chance against Buffalo? Probably not. The Tampa Bay, Dallas will be a good watch on Monday night. But I would say that the game that really stands out to me is Trevor Lawrence in his second year going against Justin Herbert.
Yeah, look, I can't really say I disagree with that. You know, obviously I have personal ties to watching, obviously, Brady and the Buccaneers. But, you know, to your point, like, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, this is a team that we've seen do a complete 180. I think they're the first team to win their division after back-to-back 14-loss seasons. That's incredible. And again, you see how big of an influence – negatively, Urban Meyer had last year, certainly on Trevor Lawrence, but just how much this team has grown. And again, you think about it, I know it started to pop up more and more recently the last couple of weeks, but I've been thinking about it all season. They still have Calvin Ridley waiting in the wings, you know, a young potential stud wide receiver who just had a year off because he couldn't keep his gambling under control. So
him and Bernie Kosar, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Bernie Kosar got tossed off the Cleveland Browns pre or post game because he wagered $19,000 on the Browns. And, like, I don't know, they embrace gambling the league, but if you're in the league, I guess don't partake in it. But yeah, no, they've got a bright future because the rest of that division looks a little bit sketchy. I mean, the Texans are going to be on their third different head coach in 3 years. Like, I don't know what you expect Lovie Smith to do with that talent or lack thereof. Maybe Nick Caserio should be fired. He's been there for 2 years and they keep firing coaches every year. The Colts, is Jeff Saturday coming back? I mean, we know the owner's a bit nuts in Jim Irsay.
Well, none of those other teams have quarterbacks.
No, you have that. Exactly. I mean, this could be a run now where Jacksonville, I wouldn't say is going to dominate because, you know, how often do we see a team dominate a division? Obviously, the Patriots for 20 years. And Green Bay to a lesser extent than the North for the last, really, since Favre got there. But, yeah, they've got their quarterback. And they've got their coach who works well with the quarterback. And they've done some nice things in free agency and good things in the draft. And like you said, that's a great point, Ian. I didn't even think of that. Calvin Ridley, there's another weapon for Trevor Lawrence next year. So, yeah, they're in good shape.
And look, I mean, the Chargers did not inspire much confidence yesterday. I know it was, you know, how important are week 18 games when you already have the playoffs locked up and essentially the playoff seeding is essentially decided. But we were kind of starting to get excited that the Chargers were starting to play some better football. They did not play well yesterday. And no. You're starting to think like, okay, you know, I would have maybe thought they could have been a dangerous team going into the playoffs. But to your point, like now you're looking at a Jacksonville team who, what have they got to lose at this point? You know what I mean? Like they've been on a high since early April, you know, when they had one of their guys go into the Hall of Fame. So it's like, you know, this has been a great year for Jacksonville and Duval County and everything like that. So, you know, what do they got to lose? And I think their team plays loose like that as well. And that's a good thing because now almost you're going, like the, yeah.
Almost like the Detroit Lions, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like the Lions of the AFC. They're just kind of this team that's out there. They've got a coach they're buying into. He's an energetic guy, Doug Peterson, much like Dan Campbell. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence, a better quarterback than Jared Goff. But, yeah, it's a similar vibe there. The weird thing about the playoffs, Ian, is I think two teams that I would have loved to see make it, Detroit and Pittsburgh, they're both playing excellent football at this point, but they didn't qualify because they got off to such horrendous starts. I mean, Pittsburgh's won, what, 8 out of their last 10, or Detroit's won 8 out of their last 10, and Pittsburgh 7 out of its last 9. That's impressive. They would have been top outs in the postseason, but, you know, you got to play better earlier in the season.
Oh, yeah. No, and this is where, like, you know, we kind of joke, oh, what does this September loss mean anything? Well, like I brought up the Patriots earlier. That loss a month ago to the Raiders, you're probably thinking, oh, well, I wish we could have kind of had that one back. Or, you know, if, again, some of the mistakes. How about the Lions game against Seattle where they just forgot how to play defense? Yeah, so I'm very interested in that matchup. Also, Joel brings it up or asks the question, do you think Tua is going to play in the playoffs? The Dolphins better hope he does. And I don't think he's, you know, a surefire answer to all their questions. But he's by far their best option at quarterback. They do not look – I mean, I know they won the game yesterday, but – that was a team that was just backing into that playoff spot and probably just at the end of that, probably a big deep breath. We made it. We made it because it was scary there for a minute. So I'll be intrigued to see that matchup if Tua plays. So I'll add that to my list of matchups I'm looking forward to the most this weekend. Again, it's if Tua plays. I don't think they're going to win, but there's a potential for a offensive back and forth, so to speak, between these two teams if Tua is in there and the Miami Dolphins offense is at its peak. And we've just seen without him in there, they just don't reach that level of efficiency or potentness because, I mean, they're just not the same without him. And again, it's not all him. I'm not saying he's going to come in and make them Super Bowl contenders. But certainly he gives them a lot better chance to win. And you know what? We've seen stranger things happen, and a Miami Buffalo game is a divisional matchup, you know? And I never chalk up divisional matchups of as being 100% normal. Something weird's gonna happen and there's always gonna be an opportunity in these games.
We've got three of them next weekend, right? You got San Francisco hosting Seattle, Cincinnati entertaining Baltimore, and then, of course, like you said, Miami at Buffalo. And I think, obviously, the home teams are the better teams and are sizable favorites, but especially in the Baltimore-Cincinnati matchup, they just played this week, so back-to-back games. And Cincinnati's offense didn't look all that great yesterday. I know they put some points on the board, but, you know, they were kind of choppy on offense, but I still have a lot of confidence in them. I'm going to be interested to see how Buffalo comes out next week. I mean, they've gone through more than any team in the league just in the last week. But obviously with the snow and you know, Dawson Knox's brother dying, they've gone through more than any other team. So now a lot of emotion yesterday in that win. Okay, now you clinch the number two seed. If you play Kansas City in the AFC Championship game, it's going to be on a neutral field. Like, there's the danger of them coming out flat at some point, right? And Tua's playing. Like you said, I'm not a huge Tua fan, but give me the B quarterback over the D minus quarterback any day of the week. At least you have a chance.
Well, and look, I mean, I'm not playing the what if game, but you know, emotions aside, like they needed two kickoff returns yesterday to win. Now again, you were playing a game of, well, if they don't get those kickoff returns, they have an opportunity to do things on offense. But still, you got to figure that, you know, you're not going to get two kickoff returns, you know, every single week. So you're going to have to figure out a way to match. No, I thought they came out and played well and managed the emotions very well. Cause I think we talked about it beforehand and I thought this is going to go one of two ways. And certainly after the opening kickoff, I thought it was going to go the route of, well, the Patriots are just going to get absolutely steamrolled because of, you know, the Bills just being a really good team, the emotion, everything that goes into this. That didn't happen. And give credit where credit's due. The Patriots did a very good job of keeping things in front of them and making sure that they weren't going to allow themselves to fall into this hole, kind of what happened in the playoffs last year without the emotional backdrop to it. Buffalo is certainly not perfect. I think all these contending teams are flawed in some way or the other. Again, we've seen Kansas City consistently struggle on offense at times, and if that happens against a team like the Bengals or the Bills, and we've seen it already this year, you know, there's a good chance that they may lose, and we may not be talking about a home game at Kansas City or a neutral field site. It might be Cincinnati and Buffalo or Buffalo and someone else. So, I'm looking forward to seeing what Miami can do. But more importantly, what is Buffalo? How are they going to respond? Not only, you know, another week removed from the whole situation, and then you add the element of getting back to the playoffs, because, you know, as much as the regular season has been all fun and games, and, well, maybe that's the bad way to describe the regular season for the Bills, but in the sense that when you're playing the regular season and you're an elite team, there's pressure, but that pressure isn't necessarily real pressure. Does that make sense? Like, you're Buffalo, you're great, you're going to go out there, you're going to win 75-80% of your games just by virtue of being a better team than most. So they really haven't had to feel that pressure. Maybe the heat was on a little bit. The heat was on a little bit to win the division when it got a little dicey there at the end. But for the most part, much like the Patriots like of years past, it's like, oh, the Jets have tied the division. They're, you know, they have the same record of 7-4 as the Patriots, and I'm just sitting back, like, just not even paying attention, because I'm like, we all know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? And that's kind of where you're at right now with Buffalo. However, as soon as the postseason begins, it becomes real. Now, all of a sudden, Buffalo is the team that has never won a Super Bowl. Buffalo is the team that hasn't even made it to the Super Bowl in this great era of Buffalo football. Buffalo is the team that, in their history, went to four straight Super Bowls and lost all of them. So now they're not the darlings. They're the team that's got to get the monkey off their back.
Yeah, I mean, the AFC, as we've talked about, you can make a case the three best teams in football are in the AFC. I mean, I think San Francisco is right there, Philadelphia as well. San Francisco, can you call them the best team in football when Brock Purdy is your quarterback? Look, he's been sensational, but still, you know, he doesn't measure up to Joe Burrow and Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts. So those four guys are going to finish 1, 2, 3, 4 in some order in MVP voting. The thing about Buffalo, they're this close to being undefeated this year. They're three losses by a total of 7 points, and they kind of like lost their way in each of those games. I mean, the Minnesota game is still unexplainable to me how they lost that game. They just needed to kneel twice, and they would have beaten the Vikings. They lost by 2 points at Miami when they turned the ball over down the stretch, and they lost to the Jets by three. So they're that close to being undefeated. They have had some close wins as well at Kansas City and wherever else. But the thing about Buffalo that's weird, they're like a heavyweight champion. They haven't won anything yet, but in terms of their style, like yesterday, they did a lot of stupid things. I mean, Josh Allen, again, a red zone interception. What were they thinking of on that punt that hit the Buffalo player and the Patriots recovered? They fumble inside their own 15. They do like a lot of stupid things. But then they have two kick returns for touchdowns, and then Josh Allen throws two absolute dimes for long touchdown passes, and it's like, oh, they won.
Someone said it, what was it? In 2020, they were this incredible offense. In 2021, they had this incredible defense. Neither of those units are at that level this year, but they're almost just a team that just knows how to win. And that's almost more important. Learning. Yeah, yep. that's the most important thing. So, I'll definitely be looking forward to seeing how they respond and whether or not, they should win this game, but there's still a lot we can learn from Buffalo against Miami this weekend. So, all right. That's going to do it for us here today. We will be back tomorrow, and of course, the rest of the week, we're going to be looking forward to this weekend and really getting geared up for these matchups. Maybe we'll power rank our players, and maybe we will give our list of the best quarterbacks in each conference heading into this weekend, and we'll have some fun with it. So, excuse me, guys. Thank you, everyone, and we will certainly be talking to you later in the week. Give us a follow on Twitter, at Full Press NFL, at FPC Radio Live, and, of course, head over to fullpresscoverage.com to check out all the latest and greatest. So thank you, everyone, and we'll talk to you then.